Good day, and welcome to the Laurentian Bank third quarter results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Susan Cohen, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. This afternoon's review of third quarter 2016 results will be presented by François Desjardins, President and CEO, and François Laurin, CFO. All documents pertaining to the quarter, including the press release, report to shareholders, and investor presentation, can be found on our website in the investor section. Following our formal comments, the senior management team will be available to answer questions. Before we begin, let me remind you that during this conference call, forward-looking statements may be made, and it's possible that actual results may differ materially from those projected in such statements. For the complete cautionary note regarding forward-looking statements, please refer to our press release or to slide two of the presentation. I am now pleased to turn the call over to François Desjardins.
Thank you, Susan. Good afternoon, everyone. Laurentian Bank posted good core earnings for the third quarter and 9 months of 2016, as adjusted net income increased by 2% and 7% respectively compared to last year. Adjusted ROE stood at 11.4%. In the quarter, we made the strategic decision to optimize our technology platform, and this resulted in a charge for the termination of a technology agreement. The one-time impact is $2.3 million after taxes, and it will immediately lead to cost savings. Excluding this item, adjusted ROE reached 12%. Considering the challenging operating environment, this is quite an achievement, as historically low interest rates and heightened regulatory requirements have taken their toll on Canadian bank ROEs. The average ROE of the Big Six stood at 14.6% in the first half of 2016, down from 18% in 2013. For our bank, delivering a solid ROE while launching key transformation plan initiatives and maintaining a strong capital position provides a firm foundation from which to advance to our 14% target in 2019. As a reminder, all Canadian banks use the advanced methodology to calculate their regulatory capital, and Laurentian Bank still uses the standardized approach. As we now have more clarity on regulatory guidelines, we have restarted the IRB initiative and plan for a late 2019 implementation. In the third quarter, the organization's cost control efforts resulted in a significantly improved efficiency ratio and a positive operating leverage. Also, loan loss provisions remained low, reflecting continuing good loan quality, and organic growth in key business areas remained strong. Indeed, loans to business customers reached $8.9 billion at the end of the third quarter, 16% higher than a year earlier, fueled by another good quarter of great performance in commercial loans, which increased by 21%. Mortgage loans originated from B2B banks through independent advisors and brokers reached $6.9 billion, a 36% increase. Growth in these key areas is in line with our 2019 objectives, and we continue to see good progress. I was pleased to announce that we were, earlier in the quarter, an agreement to acquire CIT's Canadian equipment financing and corporate financing activities. This acquisition is on track to close in the fourth quarter and underscores our commitment to increase business services in the bank mix. Combining CIT Canada portfolio with the Laurentian Bank business services portfolio results in loans and acceptances on a pro forma basis approaching the $10 billion mark. This not only positions us well to reach our 2019 target of $13 billion in loans to business customers, but contributes to expanding our pan-Canadian footprint and improving overall profitability. Concurrent with the acquisition announcement, we issued subscription receipts. Demand was strong, and the entire greenshoe option was exercised. I would like to thank investors for their support, confidence, and commitment in the Laurentian Bank. During the quarter, we took further measures to reduce corporate expenses. As previously mentioned, we are optimizing our technology platform. A new outsourcing agreement with IBM Canada to manage our infrastructure and storage operations will provide annual savings of approximately $1.5 million before taxes in each of the next 5 years. Furthermore, we are looking forward to the work involved in preparing for our corporate office move. Last month, we announced an agreement to lease 220,000 square feet on 9 floors at 1360 René Lévesque Boulevard West. This will become the new home to close to 1,400 team members relocating under one roof beginning in October 2018. The annual cost savings of reducing our footprint by 35% or so is estimated to be about $5 million a year before taxes once all the premises have been integrated. An added benefit of working together in a new, modern space is fostering teamwork and building a common culture. I'm also looking forward to using this opportunity to review our processes and achieve further efficiencies, both economic and environmental, furthering our organization's commitment to being a responsible corporate citizen. These are great examples of the many initiatives that are currently underway that collectively aim at achieving our efficiency ratio of 68% in 2019. All in all, this third quarter has seen progress on many fronts, both from business growth and the transformation plan, as we work to make our institution simpler, more efficient, and more profitable. Leadership has every confidence that by being rigorous in the execution of our plan, we will realize our objectives. We will continue to update you as milestones are reached every quarter. I will now call upon François to provide a more in-depth review of the third quarter. François?
Thank you, François. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to begin by turning to slide 14, which highlights the bank's good financial performance in the third quarter of 2016. Adjusted net income totaled $46.1 million, and adjusted EPS were $1.37. Profitability was impacted by a charge for the termination of a technology agreement in light of our strategic decision to optimize our technology platform. This amounted to $3.1 million pre-tax, or $2.3 million after tax, or 7 cents per share. Excluding this item, adjusted net income increased by 7% compared to a year earlier, and ROE was 12%, reflecting the bank's underlying good financial performance. Reported net income and EPS were in line with the adjusted measures, and were also affected by this same item of note. Moving to the drivers of our performance presented on slide 15, total revenue for the third quarter of 2016 increased by 1% to $229.1 million compared to a year earlier. Net interest income was up marginally as the challenging interest rate environment partially offset the strong loan growth. Other income increased by 2%. Net interest margin, shown on slide 16, was 1.69%. Sequentially, the decline in NIM moderated to only 2 basis points. We expect that over the next several quarters, low interest rates will linger and could result in additional modest pressure on NIM. This could be partially offset in 2017 as excess liquidity is deployed and our business mix gradually changes, in part as a result of the CIT Canada anticipated transaction. We are pleased with the growth in average earning assets of 10% year over year and 2% quarter over quarter, which was driven by our targeted loan growth, notably B2B bank mortgage loans and loans to business customers. This growth strengthens the bank's market position, but most importantly, over time, it fuels interest, net interest income and improves ROE. Other income, as presented on slide 17, increased by 2% year over year at $81.1 million. Income from brokerage operations rose 20%, reflecting good results from institutional business activities, and card service revenues increased by 14%, reflecting higher transactional volumes and increased fees. However, this was partially offset by lower income from treasury and financial market operations, reflecting lower commissions on foreign exchange transactions. Slide 18 highlights non-interest expenses, which continue to be very well controlled and were relatively stable year over year. The adjusted efficiency ratio in the third quarter was 70.1%, an improvement of 100 basis points over the past 12 months. Excluding the previously mentioned non-recurring item in the third quarter, the adjusted efficiency ratio improved further to 68.7%, demonstrating our cost containment efforts. As well, operating leverage was positive. We continue to work towards achieving a target efficiency ratio of below 68% by 2019. Slide 19 presents the CET1 ratio of 7.9% at the end of the third quarter, equal to the level at the end of the second quarter. On a pro forma basis, after giving consideration to the anticipated CIT Canada acquisition and the $155 million of escrowed subscription receipts, the CET1 ratio is expected to be slightly above 8%. Slide 20 highlights our well-diversified sources of funds. Given our strong growth in mortgage loans, we are optimizing our securitization activities, a source of funding that we're using more of. To this end, in the third quarter of 2016, debt from securitizations increased by 15% from a year earlier. As well, personal term deposits grew by 16%, largely driven by higher term deposits at B2B Bank. The bank continues to have a strong liquidity position. Turning to slide 22, credit quality remained solid. The provision for credit losses at $8.2 million was $1.2 million higher than in the third quarter of 2015 and $2.5 million higher than a year earlier. As explained in our last conference call, we expected the provision to increase in the third quarter as the regular review of the bank's collective allowance models resulted in $2.7 million of net favorable adjustments to the second quarter provision. The loss ratio was 10 basis points in the third quarter of 2016, equal to the level a year ago and 2 basis points higher than in the prior period. Despite this low ratio, Laurentian Bank remains conservatively provisioned, as shown on slide 23. The total allowance covers the bank's annual provision for loan losses by a multiple of 3.2 times at the end of the third quarter of 2016 and compares very favorably to the industry. Over the medium term, we expect the loss ratio to gradually move higher as our business mix changes, but it should be more than offset by higher net interest income. Nonetheless, with our current portfolio mix, conservative provisioning, and disciplined education process, we expect that the loss ratio will remain well below other Canadian banks. I would like to provide some additional information on the bank's $16.4 billion residential mortgage loan portfolio. Slide 24 highlights that Quebec and Ontario account for 88% of the portfolio. On a more granular basis, our exposure to the Toronto market is 20%, and the Vancouver and Calgary markets are each 3%. 53% of our portfolio is insured, and the average loan-to-value on the portfolio is 62%. We follow strict underwriting criteria, resulting in strong credit quality. OSFI recently issued more stringent mortgage stress test requirements. Even under this scenario, our analysis of our mortgage portfolio concludes that there is no impact on our internal capital adequacy assessment process, or ICAP. We remain very satisfied with the results of our conservative stress testing program and continue to project that our capital can support our targeted mortgage loan growth. Turning to slide 26, after 9 months, we're making steady progress towards meeting our midterm financial objectives. With respect to the bank's key growth drivers, we're advancing towards our 2019 targets. To conclude, we are pleased with the core earnings performance in the third quarter of 2016 and the progress that we're making on our transformation plan. Thank you again for your attention, and I will now turn the call back to Susan.
At this point, I would like to turn the call over to the conference call operator for the question and answer session. Angel?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And our first question will come from the line of Manny Groman of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. You note margin pressure from higher liquid assets held to fund the CIT acquisition. Just wondering if you can break out what the impact of that was specifically.
François, can you take that?
A few basis points in the quarter. Manny.
Okay, thank you. And then if I can switch to slide 5, the adjusted ROE chart that you show is really interesting. It definitely makes the point that you're holding the line on ROE, even though we're seeing significant pressure across the peer group. So I think the point is clear that you're doing a very good job of kind of staying in the same place. But I guess the decline in the peer group also raises questions about the ability to reach 14%. So I wonder if you could address that. It just seems like the bar to get to 14% is getting tougher given what we're seeing at the peer group.
I think you're right. The bar is getting tougher, but we have a transformation plan in place that involves a whole lot of strategic initiatives, and we believe that 14% ROE is still very much achievable in 2019. Examples is changing the mix of and adding business services in the overall bank mix. You saw the acquisition of CIT as being CIT Canada as being an example of that. By increasing the focus on advisory services and customer-facing activities versus, reduction in administrative tasks, simplifying product lines that we announced, all of these things indicate that by following our plan, we still arrive at our target. So we're comfortable with it.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And our next question will come from the line of Peter Rutledge of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to I'll start with a quick question. Your construction portfolio in Vancouver, residential construction portfolio in Vancouver or British Columbia and Alberta, how big is it?
Specifically, I think that we would need to get back to you offline on how that specific market is.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be helpful. That's fine to come back. I guess the broader question I wanted to get at was, looking at your very impressive mortgage growth, it has come from Ontario, certainly, and the rest of Canada, which I presume is out west. You've also had pretty impressive commercial mortgage and commercial loan growth. Has the composition of that growth been the same as the uninsured mortgage growth, i.e. are you pretty much flatlining in Quebec and driving very, very strong loan growth in Ontario and Western Canada?
Well, I'll ask Stéphane Therrien to comment on the growth in commercial, and then I'll pass it to Deborah Rose to comment on the growth in residential mortgages at B2B. Stéphane?
I would say that lately our growth in terms of construction lending and commercial has been higher in Ontario, followed by Quebec, and then followed by the western part of Canada.
Okay. And Deborah, do you want to comment on the growth in residential mortgages?
Yes, for B2B, the growth in residential mortgages has been pretty consistent across the board. Obviously, there's a weighting in Ontario. Much smaller in BC, but I would say Ontario, Quebec, Alberta, and then BC from a weighting perspective.
How worried about you are you about the mortgages, residential mortgage, uninsured residential mortgages underwritten in BC over the last year?
I'll ask Christian Debroux to comment on the quality of the portfolio.
Overall, the we feel very comfortable with our portfolio as it is. We have an important part of our portfolio that is insured, 52% in Vancouver. We have 58% uninsured or 42% insured in Toronto, 48% insured in Vancouver. The delinquency of the portfolio is varying, obviously, but is operating within normal parameters, so we're not seeing a deterioration. We're paying big attention to Alberta right now because of the situation. We're seeing a slight increase in the delinquency in Alberta, but the over 90 days delinquent is stable year over year, so we maintain our comfort level.
Thanks. That's helpful. And then one last one on capital. You made reference to the your goal to be an IRB towards the end of 2020. Previously, I think the bank has hinted that that might add about 175 basis points to your Common Equity Tier 1 ratio. Is that still a reasonable assumption?
I'll ask Susan Kutzman to answer this question.
Our project deadline at this point is late 2019, and we expect at least a 200 basis points increase in our capital ratios from the project.
So that gets you to about 10% when you're measured on a like-for-like basis with the Big Six. And at least if you did it today. And right now the banks seem to be trending towards 10.5% CET1. So I guess the question is, you know, I think an assumption I always had was once you get to IRB, free up some capital, be able to invest it. But if the bar is being raised, is that still by OSFI, is that still the case?
What we have to keep in mind here is that the Big Six banks are also considered domestically significant financial institutions, and we are not. So we have a different regulatory requirement, and as we've said in previous calls, our current CET1 ratio, we're very comfortable with it. We continue to be comfortable with it, and we still believe that doing IRB, moving to this regime, will allow us to free up capital.
You make a fair point. The regulators will ask for 100 basis points less. That's a good point. Will the market in a difficult time accept that, or will you have to get up to where the Big Six are?
Up to this point, nothing indicates that would be the case.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question will come from the line of Sohrab Movahedi of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. When you think about the charge from that technology-related charge that you took this quarter, I think you highlighted that the expense-revenue ratio would have been obviously better. You have not adjusted your deadline of 2019 or medium-term timeline of 2019 to get below 68%. Are you just being overly conservative, or are you planning to, is converting to IRB going to cost quite a bit of money here? Can you just talk a little bit through the puts and takes that makes you stick to that 2019 timeline?
I'll ask François Lorrain to talk about this.
Thank you, Lamar. We're very pleased with this level of efficiency. However, as we've said before, this ratio is not likely to behave in a straight line fashion over the term. So we will have some investments related to our transformation plan, and this could result in some variability in this ratio from one quarter to the next. So we clearly remain focused and disciplined with our costs, but we maintain that we will be by on a recurring basis by 2019 below 68%. So that's why we keep the line like this.
I guess you've made you've deployed capital for in pursuit of growth a little bit quicker than is this. Let me ask you the question slightly differently. You know, the CIT acquisition is a case in point example. I mean, you have been buying growth. Is this what was contemplated in the Transform plan that you had shared with us at your Investor Day?
Well, I don't know if you remember.
But inorganic growth, was that something that was implicit in that?
Yes. I don't know if you remember, but there was one slide there at the end of the presentation where I talked about, the key components of the plan. One of them was organic growth, one of them was efficiency, and one of them was acquisitions. With acquisitions, you never know what opportunities come your way, but we were aiming at taking and looking at any opportunities that come our way, but also seeking them out. But we felt that we had a good case over, the first 4 years and certainly over the next 7 years to achieve our mid and long-term targets by a combination of those three elements. Was the acquisition of CIT planned for as soon as? No. This opportunity came our way, but it certainly does indicate how serious we are about this plan.
But it does not expedite the delivery against it from a time perspective.
Not from a time perspective, no.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And your next question will come from the line of Lamar Perso of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Business loan growth this quarter was very strong. It was up, I think it was 6% year over year, and it was driven by strong syndication activities and commercial mortgage growth. I'm just wondering, should we think of this quarter as more of a one-off? There was a couple big gains here, or is this something that we can expect going forward, like this level of growth rate, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Thank you for the question. I'll ask Stéphane Tallien to give a comment on that.
If you look at the growth rate of business services or loan to business in the last couple of years, double-digit growth has been our run rate for the last couple of years. And to continue toward our plan to be at $13 billion in 3 years, that's our plan, to continue on that with that trend.
So there are no one-time, like, large gains in the quarter, and this is something we could expect going forward.
Good organic quarter growth, yeah, but nothing unexpected.
Okay, thanks. My next question is personal loan credit loss of $5.1 million. It seems like this is the second consecutive quarter where that number has come in fairly low. Could you guys explain what's going on here and if this kind of credit performance is sustainable, specifically relating to personal loans?
Would you comment on that, Christian?
Sure. Our portfolio, continues to perform well. There's nothing spectacular or any issues around the personal loan losses. A big chunk of that book is obviously investment loans. Investment loans is a very conservative underwriting where not only we have stronger credit profiles of borrowers, but we also have very good collateral-backed assets to secure those loans. So I think it's just a reflection of the conservative book that we have overall.
We'll now take our next question from Sumit Malhotra of Scotia Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Just wanted to go back to. Wanted to go back to a couple of questions on the AIRB. First off, Francois, you mentioned that from your perspective, this was almost a restart towards the move towards AIRB because of greater capital clarity. I was hoping you could just give me some specifics here as to what changed that gave you the comfort that the bank should go back to pursuing this implementation. And then secondly, I think it was asked before, I'm not sure if we got an answer, whether it's for Susan or Francois, are there going to be additional costs that we will see as the bank pushes towards AIRB in that next couple of year period until 2019?
Want to comment on that, Susan?
Yeah, I can take this. If I start with the latter part of your question, the costs, of course, this is not a free project. However, it is all part of our transformation plan and it is inherent in the performance objectives associated with the plan. As for why we feel there's more clarity, there is still, your question alludes to the fact there is still some, there's still lack of visibility on certainly the calendar and the timeline. It is expected by the end of this year that we have a clearer view of when these new standards will come into effect, but you will recall not so long ago, it wasn't even clear that there would be an advanced method for everyone. Was it better to stay on standard, et cetera? That we have better clarity on what the advanced method will look like and that it's just its existence. So we find that as it stands now, even with a little bit of certainty to come, moving to IRB is still worthwhile for us as it, we need to be on that equal footing with the other banks which we are competing against for loans. And given that we no longer have to hold a higher level of capital than against those loans.
Furthermore, I'd like to add in that, just for clarity's sake, that we're not restarting the project from scratch. There's a lot of investments that have been made and paid for already that are behind us. So really what we're looking at is we had paused the project, and now we're looking forward to finishing it.
No, that's understood. And perhaps somewhat relatedly, obviously the mix, the loan mix of the bank has been tilted towards consumer borrowers and specifically mortgages for a long period of time. I think under your transformation plan, we're starting to see a shift or to faster growth the other way, and CIT will only add to that. There'll be two parts here as well. Obviously, at least from a somewhat simple view, the more commercial your business mix drifts towards, I think the better the AIRB approach would be to your risk-weighted asset calculation. So maybe looking for a confirmation there. And then secondly, you're at about 8% pro forma, I think you mentioned, inclusive of the CIT deal. As you're adding faster or higher RWA type of loans, is there other optimization, balance sheet optimization initiatives you have going on in the background that maybe will free up RWA in other parts of the bank? It is something we've seen across the sector, especially this quarter. There's been some very large capital increases. Just wondering if that's something you're contemplating in the capital process.
I'll ask Susan Kutzman to answer the first part, and then Francois can comment on the last part of your question.
Yeah, you're quite right that the advanced method is even more beneficial as we move to the commercial loans, the more taxing on the RWA assets. And just to remind you that it's a better risk measurement tool in itself, also part of the reasoning of why we're moving towards it. I think Francois, you can take the latter part of the question.
Well, on the capital, the initiative we have, we've said at the last call, is we're trying to diversify our funding sources to lower our cost of funding, and securitization is a big part of it. And we have started and have put more assets for securitization, and Q4 should be another example going forward because we have lots of them going forward. And that's one of the big elements we're involved with Summit for reducing cost of fund and helping our capital going forward.
Last question is for Francois Desjardins, and maybe it's more to get a view on how you think about aggregate growth for the bank. When I look at the loan balances for Laurentian, I think we're in an apples to apples comparison where there's no acquisition impact. So loans are up something like 12% year over year. And then I look at revenue at the top of the house at an all bank level, it's about 1%. Now, clearly net interest margin has been a challenge for banks globally, and Laurentian hasn't been immune to that. But I wanted to ask you, is there a situation here that, you know, Laurentian was of the view that we need to bring more customers in the door, and adding loans was perhaps more important than the spread associated with them? And I don't know if I'm saying this the best way, but loan growth of 12%, revenue of 1. How are you comfortable with that dichotomy, and do you expect we'll see a shift towards focus more on revenue or profitability as opposed to just balances?
I thank you for the question. It allows me to absolutely confirm that you're absolutely right. You know, having a high NIM and a impact and less volume impacts negatively the ROE. And that's the goal, right? What is the real goal of the bank? You know, we set our targets for 2019 is to have our profitability up to 14%. So as we're looking forward in a low margin environment, you have to compensate with volume, for sure. It does add customers to the mix, for sure. It doesn't mean that we can't be more efficient at the same time, and it doesn't mean that we forget the fact that we're just starting. We're in our third quarter of a four-year plan in which we indicated that we want to fix retail, right, and get that operation a lot more effective. So this loan growth that you're seeing, it's not an anomaly. This is the plan, both in commercial real estate and at B2B. And it is fighting. You know, it's part of the recipe. Francois had mentioned this last quarter, right? NIM is not the target here. We're looking at the target ROE and NII as where we want to see growth. And that's where we're managing growth. And it's one of the reasons why we've been able to maintain our performance instead of seeing a reduction. We're looking forward to moving ahead when we start seeing more efficiencies and other things coming into play.
Sumit, if I just may add, François, I just want to clarify my point, Sumit, that not just on the NIM that the securitization helps us, but also lowers the RWA. I just want to make it clear, lowers the RWA of the assets going on the balance sheet.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you have any additional questions at this time, please press star 1. There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to hand it back over to our speakers for closing remarks.
Thank you for joining us today. Should you have any further questions, our contact information is included at the end of the investor presentation. We look forward to speaking with you again at our fourth quarter conference call on December 6th. Good day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.